You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The forecast for this weekend is for temperatures to remain below freezing with a chance of some more snow. It sounds like a good time to turn on the oven and spend some time in a warm kitchen making a delicious meal. Melissa Clark joins us now to talk about braising. She's a New York Times dining section columnist, the author of more than 30 cookbooks, including Braise, which she wrote with Danielle Boulou. Her most recent cookbook is Cook This Now, 120 Easy and Delicious Dishes You Can't Wait to Make. It's published by Hyperion. It's always a pleasure to have you on our show.
Great to be here.
And we are inviting our listeners to join the conversation. If you have a question about braising, give us a call at 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org. Also on Facebook and Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. So what are the basics of braising?
Well, the basics, what sets braising apart from, say, stewing, is the amount of liquid and the browning of the meat or the vegetables or the tofu. You can braise, or fish, you can braise anything. But what you want to do before you add any liquid is you want to get whatever you're braising golden brown. That is the key, because that step, you sear it really well on all sides, and that step adds so much depth of flavor to the sauce, because it's you've got it in your pan, so you're adding this amazing caramelized flavor to the sauce. It also helps the ingredient cook more evenly and adds flavor to whatever it is you're braising. So if you're making a stew, you don't necessarily brown first, although I do recommend it. And then the second thing is that you add less liquid, because you're not looking for a big brothy stew that you're going to serve over something. What you're looking for is just a moist environment to cook the dish in its own juices. You're adding a little liquid, but you're also encouraging it to kind of become more of itself. So if you're braising short ribs, they take on the golden flavor from the caramelization. They take on the liquid flavor if you're going to use broth or wine, but then they also release their own juices and they taste more beefy and delicious. It is a great way to cook anything.
So liquids you're suggesting are wine or broth?
It could also be water. Oh, you can braise in anything. Or beer. You could braise in a combination. It's really nice to use a combination of liquids. A little bit of apple cider if you want a sweet flavor. Say you're braising a big hunk of pork. Wouldn't it be nice to add just a little bit of apple cider along with, say, some white wine, and then you've got your aromatics? You should mix up, think about what you're braising, and then just think, what would be a nice flavor profile, a flavor companion to it, and then go from there. You can really, braising is very forgiving, so you can go out on a limb.
And you said that you can braise vegetables or tofu.
Absolutely.
What kinds of liquids would you use there?
Imagine carrots. And what liquid would you want with carrots? Maybe a little bit of fresh orange juice along with, say, either a great strong mushroom stock or a vegetable stock or chicken stock. Just a little of each. You don't need much. Here's the rule about braising. You want the liquid to come up to about half or even a little less than half of the height of whatever it is you're braising. So if you've got your carrots, keep them in big chunks and then just add a little bit of liquid to the bottom of the pan after you've got your carrots all brown. Cover it. Put it in a low oven and just let it go. And another thing about braising right now for this weekend, don't you want to turn your oven on and just like sit in the kitchen all day long? So this is the perfect time to braise, especially if you're going to braise something that takes a couple of hours.
But why braise vegetables when you can roast them and they turn out quite wonderful?
You can do that too. But you don't want to eat roasted vegetables every single day, do you? It's good to mix things up. I say, try something new. And also another thing is roasting vegetables gives them the exterior little bit of crispness, which is great. Braising is soft and supple all the way through. And sometimes you just want to maybe not use your teeth so much.
Now, I have read there's kind of debating sides on whether you should use a high-quality wine when you're using a wine. I think Cook's Magazine said that if you're using a red wine, any red wine, the cheapest will do if you're going to be cooking it for a long time and the alcohol is going to be pretty much eliminated. Mm-hmm. But if you're adding it at the last minute, well, then you would want a high-quality wine.
I always want to use a decent wine. I mean, it doesn't have to be, you don't have to buy your you know, $20 bottle and pour it into your stew, although there's nothing wrong with that and it will taste good. But you can, you know, buy a $7 bottle of wine and that is fine. Just avoid those things labeled cooking wine, because those are, I mean, anything, if you put it up and you smell it or you take a little sip and you think, oh, God, I don't want to drink this, then you just don't even put it near your kitchen.
They have salt in them, don't they?
They do. They have salt. Sometimes they have sugar in them or corn syrup or a little bit of preservative, and they're just not meant for. I'm not even sure what they're meant for. They're meant for people who really aren't as concerned with having a beautiful berries at the
end.
Well,
in New York, of course, there is a problem. Those are the only kinds of wines you find in supermarkets because of the laws.
Exactly. So it does. So you do have to plan ahead. You can't. But you know what, though? Don't use wine. You don't need to use alcohol in a braise. You can use just stock and water. And or again, I really like to use a little bit of fruit juice sometimes for the sweetness.
Can you mix stocks? In other words, could you use you're doing something with beef, could use a chicken stock?
Oh, Leonard, that's very risque. But yes, you can. Absolutely.
I've always wondered about that, white wine as opposed to red wine. When I think of braising, let's say short ribs, I think of red wine and beef stock.
Yes, exactly. The problem with beef stock, though, haven't you noticed this, that when you buy beef stock, unless you make your own, yes, if you make your own, then that's, you should use beef stock. If you're using beef, it will just make it all the beefier. But if you're going to buy stock, beef stock tends not to taste as good when you buy it as chicken stock does. You can buy more reliably flavored chicken stock. Or if I know that I always have chicken stock in the freezer. Sometimes I have beef stock in the freezer, but it's not a staple for me. I think a lot of people are like that. They'll have their chicken stock or their poultry stock. So better to use homemade anything than purchased anything. So whether you're braising beef, it's okay to add homemade chicken stock, or purchase chicken stock. That's fine. Switch it up a little bit.
Now, we've been talking a lot about short ribs. There was a time when short ribs were one of the most inexpensive cuts of meat.
I know.
Do you think braising is the reason that now you're buying something that is mostly bone and it still costs $14 or $15 a pound?
It's all those chefs out there. No, it's all our fault, because we all discovered from going to great restaurants and having amazing short ribs that, wow, short ribs taste really good when you braise them. So, you know, supply and demand. You know what used to be really inexpensive, Leonard? Oxtails. And I love oxtails. They are a great thing to braise. I actually have a recipe coming out in the Times in a couple of weeks for braised oxtail. And they used to be so cheap, but now people are discovering them, and I think they're going to be the next short ribs. So I think the price is climbing. So buy your oxtails now while you can.
You can give us a call if you want to join in the conversation. Our number is 212-433-9692. Write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. And it's not just about braising. What are you doing? What are you cooking in these cold, cold days? I woke up this morning, according to the thermostat, the house was at 74 degrees. According to my body, it was very cold. I turned on the oven.
Exactly. And, you know, that's another thing. I would love to know, yes, what people are cooking, but also what you're braising. What are some things that we hadn't thought of for braises? So, because I know that I want to sit in front of the oven all weekend long, so I want some good ideas.
Well, we tend to think of braising in French terms, don't we?
Yes, we do.
So but most braises include a basic mirepoix, the French sautéed onion, carrot, celery base. But I'd imagine other cultures have different things.
Yeah. I mean, for example, you can do, there's a lot of wonderful braising in traditional Chinese cooking. You can, for example, a red braise or braising with a little bit of caramel, which I think they do in Vietnam is very popular. You can use really anything to braise, but a soy sauce braise, just a little bit of soy sauce, maybe a little bit of rice wine, you know, and a piece of pork. Oh, that's sounding really good to me right now. Also, another braised chicken. We should talk about chicken, because chicken is, you know, you think, oh, a roast chicken. And a roast chicken is great, but there is something about a long-simmered braised chicken where it just is falling off the bone and you have all those vegetables in the pot with it. And the great thing is that the vegetables taste like chicken and the chicken really tastes like vegetables. You don't get that transfer of flavors when you're roasting something.
On the other hand, what about fish? You don't want to cook fish very long, so can you braise them?
Yes, you can. Not every braise has to take, you know, an hour to 2 to 3 hours. You can braise fish in half an hour, and there are some great recipes for braising. Something very firm, you want to use maybe a whole monkfish tail, or big, thick steaks of tuna, or swordfish, something that it will stand up to the heat, stand up to the braise. And if you think about it this way, you have to brown whatever it is before you braise it, right? If browning it is enough to cook it through, it's not appropriate for braising. But if you have to brown it and then let it cook a little while longer, which is why you need a nice thick piece of something, then that's going to work for a braise.
Tom from California has written in asking a question that I might have wanted to ask as well because I just came back from Mexico. He says, are carnitas best made by braising? If so, what ingredients do you think are best to add to
them? Interesting about carnitas. Well, you should talk about this because you were just in Mexico.
But I didn't make carnitas.
You didn't make carnitas.
But I do know
you made mole.
The classic carnitas recipe that I understand is just simply take the pork and put it in you braise it in water and nothing else and just let it develop some kind of a crust.
Yeah, because what happens with carnitas is that the fat in the pork, it will melt. And that is a good thing about braising. When you're cooking low and slow, you have the fat melts into the sauce. And with carnitas, you cook all the water off and then the fat that's come out of the pork will brown and it will brown all over and it will get crunchy and crispy. So you're starting out with a braise, but at the end, you're getting something that's very crunchy and that's not, you know, a typical braise is very soft and very, it'll just be like velvet on the tongue and carnitas should be crunchy, but also be soft on the inside. So it's kind of a combination technique. But you can, if you wanted to do a more of a braised pork, you can do the same ingredients and just cover the pot the whole
time. Isn't part of the problem now that pork has become so lean in recent years that you're not getting all that much fat out of it?
In which case you have to add a little bit of fat back. Here's an interesting point about braising that I think maybe some people may not know to do. At the very end, after your meat is pretty much cooked or whatever you're cooking is pretty much cooked, you want to take the cover off the pot. It's important to braise with the cover on so that it seals in all the liquid and you're getting this lovely, moist, warm environment for your ingredients to cook. But at the end, you take the cover off, you keep it in the oven, and you let some of the moisture, the water cook off, and then that's what reduces your sauce.
And you're using a Dutch oven mostly?
I usually use a Dutch oven, but you can braise in one of those sauté pans, like a big sauté pan is really good for braising something like fish that doesn't have a lot of height to it. You don't need necessarily to braise in a Dutch oven.
My guest is Melissa Clark, who writes a weekly column in the New York Times and has written over 30 cookbooks. And we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org. Before I get to another call, a follow-up question from a listener. What else goes in carnitas? Do you use any spices?
You know, that is a really good question. I think traditionally it would be pretty simple. It'd just be maybe salt, pepper, and someone else can answer that for us because I haven't made carnitas in a long time. But I think it's pretty, maybe garlic and herbs, but very simple. I don't think you use a lot of spices, but I'm not sure about that. So anybody who wants to write in the answer, we would be really happy to know.
Let's take a call. Okay, Caroline from Long Beach, you're on the air.
Hello, Leonard. Hi, Melissa. I have a two-part question. I make a terrific brisket, I think, and I use a Le Creuset. I've been doing it this way for years. But I don't add any liquid. When I sear the brisket really well on all sides, I usually take it out, throw a bunch of onions in there, saute them a little bit, then put the brisket back in, cover it, simmer it, really low. And when I look into the pot every, 20 or 30 minutes or so to turn it over, it's making its own liquid almost up to the half that you're talking about. My mother-in-law says that I should be adding liquid to that it would be better. And I don't know why I should if it's making its own.
If it's tasting delicious, then don't change a thing. You know what's happening is that the onions are also adding liquid. Even though you've sautéed them, there's still a lot of moisture in the onions.
Right. And the moisture hits the cover of the Le Creuset.
Mm-hmm.
And when you remove the cover, all of that moisture drips down into. So that's one of the other things. And my second question was quickly that my son likes to put it in the oven at a very low temperature,
mm-hmm.
but I find it doesn't make as much liquid when you put it in the oven. And why is that?
Oh, that's interesting. Probably because the temperature is lower. So if you're cooking it at a higher temperature on top of the stove, you'll just get more, especially a quicker release of liquid. If you put it in the oven at a low temperature, you may eventually get the same amount, but it might take a lot longer.
Thank you for your call. We have to take a little break now.
Oh, we do, but I wanted to talk about that brisket. Can we come back and do that?
We will. In fact, there are other people who want to talk about brisket as well, so you'll have plenty of opportunity. My guest is Melissa Clark, who writes a weekly column for the New York Times dining section. What was this week's?
This week's was oatmeal cookies with dates, and then I made a mascarpone stuffing as like a big sandwich cookie.
But you've also collaborated with the great chef Daniel Ballou on a book called Braise.
Yes.
So you've thought a lot about braising over the years. I don't know if there are any braising recipes. I'll have to go check again in your latest book, Cook This Now, 120 Easy and Delicious Dishes That You Can't Wait to Make.
There are many braising things.
Okay. Well, we'll come back and do some more braising right after this. We're back with Melissa Clark, who writes a weekly column for the New York Times in the dining section. Also is the author of 30 cookbooks, including the most recent, Cook This Now, 120 Easy and Delicious Dishes You Can't Wait to Make. It's published by Hyperion. And we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. Also, you can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. And before I go to another call, I know you wanted to talk a bit more about what that first caller was calling about.
I want to talk about the brisket with the onions, because first of all, that recipe sounds great. I love the simplicity of it. But another thing is you don't need a lot of liquid or even any liquid if you're not planning on serving your meat with a sauce. So the liquid helps create a sauce. But if you're taking that brisket and you're just serving it, you know, sliced with the onions on top, it doesn't need a sauce. And so you really don't need extra liquid there. But if you want to have a sauce, that's when you probably need to add a little bit of liquid.
Well, we can go both ways here.
Yeah.
With one pot meal and with something that is then accompanied by other things.
Yes, exactly. So you can take braising in several different directions.
Let's take another call. Peter from Brooklyn, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you guys doing? So with the snow coming up tomorrow, I'm going to be braising some oxtails.
Oh, my favorite. Fantastic.
And yeah, you had said that oxtails are becoming more expensive. I'm from the West Indies, and even in West Indian neighborhoods, oxtails are definitely becoming more expensive.
It's because everybody else is going to buy them, right?
Well, it's their suppliers who are charging them more.
Yes, that's true,
exactly.
Too. So, well,
exactly.
I apologize for their popularity, but they're so delicious, aren't they? How are you? What are you putting in your stew?
So, I'm from Jamaica. I'm married to a woman from Trinidad, so we have a combination of the two ways of cooking.
Are they that different, even though the islands aren't all that far apart?
Yeah, because the population makeup is so different. In Trinidad, for instance, the population is pretty much 50% African descent and 50% East Indian. And my wife is both, as am I. And there are more different influences of French in Trinidadian cooking as opposed to Jamaica. So I'm going to be browning my oxtails the way that they do in Trinidad with a little sugar first to make a caramel. Mm. And then you brown the oxtails with lots of thyme. And then my special touch is I add stout to my liquid.
You add, I'm sorry, what do you add?
A stout, like a Guinness.
Oh, okay, stout.
Stout.
Uh-huh.
Yes. So a little broth, usually chicken, with a touch of Guinness. And before I cover my pot and put it in the oven, we have to stick a habanero pepper in there.
Oh, that sounds fabulous. That sounds absolutely delicious.
That's called fusion cooking.
Yeah, that's West Indian. It's all fusion because we're from all over the place. That with just some plain rice, or if you want rice with peas. In Jamaica, we use butter beans.
Mm.
And in Trinidad, it's a lot of pigeon peas.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have a fight over which of the peas we may use or just go with plain rice.
That sounds wonderful. I love the idea of the caramel with, you know, I think of caramel as being something that caramel fish is the thing that comes to mind, a braised caramel fish. But I love that idea with the oxtails, and I'm going to try that sometime.
Just a little bit of sugar.
Yeah, just a touch. You probably cook it until the sweetness is almost gone.
Yeah, you cook it in the oil until it starts to bubble and become a caramel. Then you put your meat in and saute that very quickly, and then you add your liquid.
Thank you for calling us. Some listeners have been writing in. One wonders, is cooking in a slow cooker braising?
If you brown the ingredient first and you don't add liquid to cover. You add less liquid. I mean, those are the two distinctive marks of braising, is the browning and then the amount of liquid that you add.
Virginia on Facebook asks, what is the difference in baking time and temperature between traditional baking and braising, for example, with a pork loin?
Well, you know, so you would call something baked if you're not covering it and you don't have any liquid. You know, just you just put it in the oven and you'd bake it, and you could bake it at any temperature. I mean, I think baking could be done as low as 300 or 325, which is what you'd want to do your braise at. So the oven temperature doesn't have to vary. Really, it's about the liquid and covering the pot and the browning first.
Susanna left this question on our show page. I just bought a few cans of cannellini beans. Can I braise beans and veggies together? I was thinking white bean, bacon, carrots, tomato stew, white wine, and chicken stock.
That sounds great. I think that's more of a stew, though. You know, this is one of those things you could call them braised, because if you just keep the liquid level low, I'd say that would pass. I think technically if you don't brown the beans, which you probably wouldn't brown beans, it's not technically a braise, but I would call it braised white beans, and that would be perfectly fine. I think everybody would be extremely happy to eat that. It sounds delicious.
And this is a good time of year for beans as well.
It is a good time. And again, beans are another one of those long cooking dishes that you just want to – I like to cook beans in the oven, and you just want to put them in there. You want to forget about them and just wait until you start to smell them, and then you think, oh, I'm hungry, and it warms your kitchen and it warms your whole house.
We go now to Ellen in Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. My mother, thanks for taking my call, and it's an honor to talk to you both.
The honor is all ours.
30 cookbooks, my lord.
Over 30.
My mother was a school teacher, so, you know, she had limited time, and I don't know where she got this, if it was from her family or she made it up, but she used to braise on top of the stove in a essentially heavy aluminum chicken fryer, chuck steak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she browned it, as you suggest, she would use onions, garlic, carrots, I think. It's a long time ago, so I've forgotten. But it was, if there's such a possibility, a quick braise, relatively speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried it myself when I was new to the kitchen. I haven't done it recently because I don't cook much, unfortunately. But except if company's coming. So this was, to me, I was one of my favorite childhood memories. I successfully reproduced it.
Oh, great.
And did I say that the liquid she used was tomato juice?
Oh, nice. Yeah, that's a great, tomato juice is great. Or canned tomatoes in their own juices, that's great. That works as a liquid and has so much flavor. That's a great.
Thanks for making me think about it.
Okay, well, thank you for calling us.
You know, that's what's interesting. I keep talking about braising in the oven in a Dutch oven, and then you put it in the oven. You know, you don't need to have an oven to braise. You can braise perfectly well on top of the stove. The reason I like the oven is that when you're braising on top of the stove, you have to be a little bit more careful about checking it because it does go a bit faster. The liquid it's hard to get your stove as low and even as your oven, which is why I like to braise in the oven. But if, say, that you don't have an oven or you have a bread in the oven or something that needs to cook at a different temperature, you can braise on the stove. And here's another thing for all you bakers out there. If you're planning on baking something and you want to use your oven for baking, but you also want to have a braise, so you can start your braise in the oven and then say it's time to put the cookies in. Take the braise out of the oven, put it on top of the stove at a very low heat, bake your cookies, pull the cookies out, put the braise back in the oven. It's not going to hurt it at all as long as you keep the heat very low on top of the stove. I do it all the time.
And what about keeping the heat low in the oven?
Yeah.
What temperature do you suggest?
I usually braise at 325. I think in the Danielle Ballou book, we did 300.
Is braising very forgiving?
It doesn't matter.
At 300, 325,
yeah,
and you can forget that it's there, and it's still going to come out great.
Exactly. I mean, you can even braise at 350, although I think you run the risk of it maybe. Okay, you don't want to braise at a higher heat, because the higher the heat, the more the liquid is going to bubble. You want a low simmer. If you get an actual boiling, there's a chance that your meat might toughen, depending on what the cut is. So it's better, it's safer, and it's better to braise at a lower temperature. But it does it 325, 300, so it'll cook a little faster, a little slower. That's the beauty of a braise.
Dave from Brooklyn, hi, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going?
Things are going well so far. Are you going to mess it up?
I wanted to talk to you about my weird hippie fusion dish that I make all the time now. It's a miso braised Brussels sprouts with either a bean or some other smoked protein and a tahini sauce, and I serve it over noodles.
Okay, miso braised Brussels sprouts with tahini sauce served over noodles?
Indeed.
That sounds, I have to say, that sounds kind of crazy, but I'm going to try it. So what do you put in your tahini sauce, like a garlic, lemon?
Yeah, you know, garlic, the tahini sauce, I tend to put a lot of ginger and soy sauce in. It's basically one day I was going to do this with, I usually do it with cabbage or bok choy or something of that nature. And the only thing I have left in the fridge is Brussels sprouts because Brussels sprouts tend to last a lot longer than most other green vegetables.
Yep.
And, you know, it came out so well that it became part of the standard rotation.
And it's a good vegetarian dish.
Exactly.
Well, thank you for calling.
Brussels sprouts are great to braise. It's such a good point.
And a number of people have called in to ask for more vegetarian braising suggestions.
Because we're meat heavy right now.
And because a lot of people have become vegetarians.
Yeah, right. And Brussels sprouts are the perfect example of a vegetable that you want to braise. Don't cut them up. I like to braise them whole. I think that they do better when you braise them whole because you want that slow cooking. You want the liquid to evaporate. You want to give the liquid a chance to evaporate. So if you're going to have them, I'd say roast them, but keep them whole, then do them in a braise, and they just turn so succulent and soft, and they're just lovely. Another thing you can braise, the gentleman was just talking about cabbage, right? Cabbage is great braised. Again, I would keep it in big pieces, maybe halve it if you have a small head or quarter it if you have a large one. You want to make sure to cut it through the root so that it all stays together. Brown it. And then miso sounds great, or you could braise it in, I mean, white wine and garlic and cabbage is a really simple but lovely combination. And that will, if any cabbage doubters out there, you will change your mind because braised cabbage is really special.
But when you're braising with meat.
Yes.
Is it best to have a cut that has bones in it?
I think so, because the bones have marrow, and the marrow is going to enrich the sauce. Marrow is great. Marrow tastes, it has a slight funkiness, and it tastes like whatever the meat is that you're cooking, and it just has an earthiness as well. And so when you add marrow to the sauce, which anytime you cook meat on the bone, you're going to do that, you're really adding an extreme complex flavor that you can't get from anywhere else.
And that usually means a cheaper cut of meat, whether you're talking about pork or lamb or beef.
Except when it comes to short ribs, which are you can get them on the bone or off the bone. Here's another thing about short ribs. So, you know, they sell them on the bone or off the bone. They also sell them cut flanken style, which is when instead of having these pieces of meat that are on long bones, they're cut across the bone so that you have more surface area of the bone exposed. Try flanken instead of short ribs if you like that marrow flavor, because you'll have more marrow in the sauce. I think it's fabulous.
Well, we have included your recipe for braised short ribs with red wine on our website.
Yeah, it's a very simple...
Can we use the flanken
instead?
You can
use flanken there, but you'll need more. Okay, because flanken has a higher percentage of bone to meat. So, and I think the recipe I have is actually for boneless short ribs. I don't know why I did that. I should have done it on the bone. Sometimes you just cook with what you have, but I think I probably had boneless ones. But if you want to substitute, you just have to increase the weight. So I think I have 3 or 3.5 pounds of meat. You want to do more like 5 pounds on the bone, and just to make sure that you have enough meat, because you're obviously not eating the bones, although you can gnaw on them, and they're really tasty.
Barbara from Stanford, Connecticut. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Melissa, thank you so much for all your wonderful recipes.
Thank you.
Have family in Sweden, and we visited there frequently, where we've had reindeer stew. I don't know if it's braised or not, but it is just delicious.
Mm-hmm. Now, interesting because, you know, our next segment is with a filmmaker who mm-hmm. documented a year in the life of a family of reindeer herders.
Right.
It's opening today.
I've heard that. But I'm not aware that one can buy reindeer in the U.S.
I have never seen reindeer in the U.S. for sale. But I think, I mean, I would think venison would be maybe similar. I don't, have you had venison? Is it similar or is it very different?
I haven't had venison, no.
So that, no. I might try that and just to see if it's comparable. Is reindeer a little bit sweet? Does it have a slight sweetness?
It is a little sweet. It's very tender.
It tastes like elk?
I'm sorry.
Or moose? No, nothing. I was making a joke.
When we were first served it by an aunt, I was a little weary.
Yeah.
Leery of this. And then we enjoyed it so much, and we've had it at other households and even in the cafeteria in a museum in Stockholm. And it's something we search out now, just as when we're in Scotland, we search out haggis.
Yeah, well, alas.
Which I think you can also braise.
Well, I guess you could check and find whether reindeer is available by going to the internet. Pretty much everything.
I know. You'll be able to tell you. I mean, I imagine they would import it. I'm sure you could get it here. But I would try venison or maybe elk. Actually, elk is a little bit sweet. Elk is lovely.
A few listeners have asked about the Italian classic dish of pork loin braised
in
milk.
Yes. Mm. You know, I was thinking that. I was thinking about milk as another liquid. Milk is great.
And what about demi-glaces? A listener said she'd heard that when you using wine, you should reduce it by half before you put it in.
That is a great tip. I do that some. You don't have to do that. If you're going to take the cover off the braising pot and let the wine reduce as it cooks, you don't need to reduce it by half. However, it is a great trick. I do it all the time. If I have that extra 15 or 20 minutes that it takes to reduce a bottle of wine down by half, so I'll do that. This is what you do. You saute everything in your pot. You brown your meat. You take it out. You put your vegetables in. You saute those. Then you add your red wine or white wine. You let it simmer in the pot until it's halfway. It takes about 15 minutes. Then you put your meat in there. That is a great tip. It just gives you more concentration of flavor.
And then after you take the meat out, what do you do with the liquid?
Okay, so either your liquid, if you've taken the cover off the pot and you've added the right amount of liquid, it should be fairly thick and saucy. But if it's not thick enough, simple fix. Just take the pot out of the oven, take the meat and the vegetables out, just use a slotted spoon, leave the liquid in the pot, and then bring it to a boil on the burner, and it'll just reduce down until it's thick enough. You can also, if you want to add a little bit of a beurre manier, you can just add equal parts flour and softened butter, and you just mix them together, and you add a little of that as your liquid is reducing, and that will thicken it up and make it a beautiful glossy sauce.
Melissa Clark has written a lot about braising over the years. She collaborated with the great French chef Daniel Ballou on a book called Braise, and she has braising recipes in her latest book, Cook This Now, 120 Easy and Delicious Dishes That You Can't Wait to Make. It's published by Hyperion. And we have her recipe for short ribs on our show page at WNYC.org. Melissa, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show.
That just flew by. Great to be here. Thank you.